Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And today, I am here to review the Butter Battle book by Dr. Seuss. Here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. And I guess we should kick off this episode by addressing the elephant in the room right off the bat. This has absolutely nothing to do with Mortal Kombat. It's been a whole string of Mortal Kombat-related episodes, three reviews in a row of Mortal Kombat, and I've really enjoyed this year so far of getting into the world of Mortal Kombat. Let me just do some quick math. 30 and 30 is one, and that's another two, and that was it. I think it's been like 3.5, maybe almost 4 hours worth of content put together for the Mortal Kombat episode so far, plus watching all the movies, which takes it probably closer to those two or two, probably closer to like 6 hours worth of watching Mortal Kombat. So I've really enjoyed engrossing myself into the world of Mortal Kombat, but just like this time last year when I did all of the Karate Kid movies in the run-up to Karate Kid Legends, I really just need a palate cleanser right now. And that's how last year I ended up doing the clones of Bruce Lee. I was like, I just need something completely different at this point in order to just reset myself before I get into the next wave of things. And yeah, that's definitely the case here. With as much as I've enjoyed doing all this Mortal Kombat stuff, I just need a hard palate cleanser, and this seemed like the best possible place to do that. I guess I should also address another elephant in the room. Hello, elephant number two. I am very fully aware of the fact that the Mortal Kombat 2021 review with Robert Miranda of This Seat's Taken went over the 30 minutes or less mark. Yes, I know. I didn't bring it up in the Mortal Kombat 2 review because I wanted to be so focused on that. But yes, it did indeed go over the 30 minutes or less mark, just by a hair. I tried to edit it down a little bit without cutting anything of substance, and that was the best I could do. Same with Mortal Kombat Annihilation, actually, with Joe Day. I had to trim that one up a little bit. That one was easier, though, and that one didn't go over 30, but the Mortal Kombat 2021 did, and as such, I now have to take on a challenge to repay my debt and restore my honor so I may be the podcast host with the most amount of honor. And it took me a moment, but then I realized something pretty obvious that I could do. So this year, I have focused primarily on the live-action Mortal Kombat films. There was actually a series of animated films that came out between 2020 and 2024, I think, under the Mortal Kombat Legends umbrella. I wasn't planning on reviewing any of those this year, but because I need to take on a challenge, I will review the first one, which is called Scorpion's Revenge. I put it off initially because I was like, I want to focus on like the main live action ones. But I've heard they're pretty good. I need a challenge. And furthermore, Joel McHale is the voice of Johnny Cage. And if that's the case, sign me up. I love Joel McHale. I'll watch anything with Joel McHale in it. And in this case, I'm cool with him being the voice of Johnny Cage. I don't know if I want him to be the body of Johnny Cage, but the voice, I definitely want to hear that. Now, with all that out of the way, let's get into the actual episode here today. And you did hear me correctly, folks. I said that we are here today to discuss the Butter Battle book by Dr. Seuss. What honestly could be said about Dr. Seuss that hasn't been said already? Dr. Seuss has become a stapled corner of every child's bookshelf, and for some people, a staple of their Christmastime movie watching as well. Dr. Seuss put out such bangers as The Cat in the Hat, The Cat in the Hat Comes Back, Horton Hears a Who, producer Cooper's personal favorite, Go Dog Go, and my personal favorite, Green Eggs and Ham, And of course, there is the juggernaut that is How the Grinch Stole Christmas. The guy just wrote bangers, y'all. The guy knew what he was doing. Dr. Seuss wrote 51 books during his lifetime, with that final book being Oh, the Places You Will Go, which seems oddly poetic in a way for that to be his final book during his lifetime. Still to this day, in the year of our Lord 2026, there are still books being published under Dr. Seuss's name. Out of those original 51 books that were written during his lifetime, we're here today to discuss book number 47, The Butter Battle Book. So we are near the end of his life here with this book. The Butter Battle Book falls into a very unique category, a category that books like Oh, the Places You Will Go and his also beloved classic, The Lorax, would also fall into, of a book being a bit of a deeper philosophical reflection versus just goofy, silly tongue twisters like Walk It in My Pocket or One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish, which, by the way, I'm not one to argue with medical professionals or whatever it is Dr. Seuss has a doctorate in, tongue twisters, I imagine. But folks, when was the last time you read One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish? I'm not talking about the board book. I'm talking about like the actual like hardcover paper book. That book is far too long. Again, I'm not one to argue with whatever doctorate Dr. Seuss has, but that book is too long. That one is far too long, and it has no point. There's no point to that book whatsoever. Anyway, the previously mentioned three books all fall into this category of being a book that is a bit deeper. Oh, the Places You Will Go has become a staple of actually this time of the year, graduation season, of looking back on life and seeing how much further you can go and all the amazing things that you think you're going to do, but you end up just going to barely be able to afford a home and groceries and all the other normal stuff that actually eventually sets in the real life. And then there's the Lorax that is a commentary on environmentalism, industrialization, capitalism. And then there's our topic today, The Butter Battle Book, a book that Dr. Seuss himself actually said he did not know if he wrote that book for children or for adults. And given the content and how he writes the book, I think it's actually very obvious that he doesn't know who he wrote this book for. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in a supporting way. Like, it is hard to tell who this book is actually for. With that, I will address the third elephant in the room that, yes, I am very much well aware of the fact that Dr. Seuss is not necessarily the gold star standard he used to be. Yes, he has written, like I said, banger after banger, but some very necessary criticism has been brought about his works of how he does depict minorities. I believe it was even the Dr. Seuss estate polled, was it If I Ran the Zoo, I think is the book, that they, because of racist depictions of Asians, I believe. And so it has crept up in some of his other works. If you go back, Dr. Seuss used to be a cartoonist, like a political cartoonist for, like, you know, like political comics and newspapers during World War II. So you can just imagine some of the art and jokes he was making for that. So yes, I'm well aware of the fact that even though Dr. Seuss has a pretty prominent role in a lot of children's literary experience growing up, it's not necessarily like the gold star that he's not seen as the gold star that he used to be. Maybe some of his characters, like the Grinch, the Cat in the Hat, the Lorax, but not like him himself. And I have seen some people on social media trying to give voice to minority authors who are writing books in that kind of tongue twister style that Dr. Seuss is known for, but with stories that are more inclusive. So be on the lookout for those if you're looking for some Dr. Seuss alternatives that still have that Seussism to it. The Butter Battle Book and The Lorax sat on my parents' bookcase. My parents had a bookcase. They had three shelves to it growing up, and each shelf was like served a different purpose. The shelf it was on was like the books that I and my brothers had to ask permission for to go read. There were books that we could, like, you know, that were our books that we could very easily get our hands on. I could get to my Nate the Great books anytime I wanted to. But there were certain books that were a bit more off limits, or at least we needed to check in before we could take them. And I think part of the reason for that is the fact that books like The Lorax and The Butter Battle Book do require a bit of critical thinking. I, on the other hand, decided to read this book to my four-year-old, producer Cooper, just to kind of get his take and perspective on it a little bit. And it was interesting, something that came up while we were reading this book, and it jogged my memory of the first time I read this book, when I was probably right around fourth or fifth grade. I'll tell you that story here in a bit. But first, if you have never read this book, because honestly, The Butter Battle Book isn't necessarily one of the Dr. Seuss books that initially rolls off the tongue. Name 10 Dr. Seuss books, go. I doubt this one is going to show up unless you are just struggling to come up with one. You have 51 to choose from during his lifetime. That, and the fact that maybe you just haven't read this one since you were a kid, let's review The Butter Battle Book. So, this story follows the Ukes and the Zooks. We're off swinging with this one. The story opens with a grandfather who is a Zook. Sorry, no, he's a Uke. I've already messed up the identical sounding words. So there's the Ukes and the Zooks. This story follows a grandfather who is a Uke, who brings his grandson with him to a wall. This is a massive wall that divides the Ukes from the Zooks. And he's telling him, his grandson, this story about how when he was a younger man, he used to be the patrol person at the wall. And it flashes back to when he's much younger. The wall is a lot shorter. It's probably more like thigh high rather than a couple stories tall. And his job is to patrol the wall to make sure the Zooks don't get too close to it. And he has a switch, not the Nintendo, but like the stick with branches that's really thin that you can, like, if you whack somebody, it really leaves a sting. So his job is to make sure no Ukes get too close to the wall. The reason why there's a wall and they're divided is because the Zooks put their butter, they butter their bread on the bottom of their bread, while the Ukes, who's the guy who's telling the story, they put their butter on the top of the bread. Now, I imagine I can speak for most of us in saying putting butter on the bottom of the bread certainly is a choice, but also you could just flip the bread over in either scenario, and it's the other side, and now it's on the other side technically, unless it's like an end piece, I guess. But it is a choice. It is a choice to put the butter on the bottom of the bread. It is a choice. Not where I would put it per se. Maybe. More than likely you either, but it is also not a reason to build a wall or to start a war, which is where this is headed. One day, as the grandfather is patrolling the wall, a Zook shows up with a slingshot to break his switch. He goes back to his leadership, and they devise a thing that is a slingshot with three parts, so it shoots three things at once. And then the Zook comes back with this thing that catches three slingshot shots and then launches them back. And then eventually there's a dog with a gun strapped to it. And then there's war elephants. And then kind of this like mech suit thing shows up until eventually the story moves to a point where, again, the wall is like growing throughout this. And it eventually ends with this grandfather who has been given a bomb to go blow up the Zooks. Everyone is being escorted into underground bunkers, except for his grandson. It comes full circle back to the beginning of the book, where he is bringing his grandson to the wall to see him blow everything up, only to be met by a Zook who also has a bomb. So, all of that, the escalation aspect, really reminded me of the iconic scene in The Untouchables. I think it's Sean Connery when he's like, if he challenges you to a fight, you bring a knife. And if he brings a knife, you bring a gun. If he brings a gun, you bring a bigger gun. This is like, you know, when it comes to violence, just keep escalating. And that's the case here, is that things just kind of keep escalating to a point where we started with a feud over what side of the bread to put butter, and now they're going to blow each other up. And the amazing part of the Butter Battle book is that the book ends with both of them on the wall with the bombs. That's it. It's a total cliffhanger. You don't know if they blow each other's towns up. You don't know. You don't know if they do. And this brings me back to the first time I read this book. Because I was homeschooled through elementary school. I don't know if you can tell that from the everything about me. I think I've gotten most of my homeschoolisms off of me by now. But who knows? I'm sure something still shows. And one of my assignments for reading English class, whatever it was called then, was I had to read this book and then write or draw how I think this story would have ended. So how did a fourth or fifth grader living post 9/11 on a steady diet of Samurai Jack, Batman Beyond, and Teen Titans say that this story ended? Well, I sat down and I actually opted to draw. Terrible artist then, still a terrible artist now. It's kind of hard when producer Cooper wants me to draw pictures for him. But I sat down and this is what I wrote, or well, drew. This is what I drew. I drew a picture of them standing on the wall, face off with the bombs, and then a picture of them tossing the bombs into a trash can. Okay, so I'm a child when I wrote this, so I understand that more than likely the bomb still would have blown up. But my idea of how this book would have ended, or should have ended, was that they would have decided to do the morally right thing of not blowing each other up over something as petty as what side of the bread to put the butter, and they threw their bombs away. How a fourth grader came up with the most John Lennon sounding answer, I don't know. Especially given the climate and some of the like voices around me at the time, I actually concluded that no, they decided to do the right thing and to end this feud. If we want to continue to psychoanalyze how children are interpreting this book, I did find it interesting as producer Cooper and I were reading this book, because the story is told from the perspective of the Yook, he at one point makes this comment that basically alludes to what is the bad guy going to do next. The story is being told by, from one certain perspective, therefore he is concluding, maybe because of the media that he usually watches, that that person therefore is the good guy. He's the center of the story, and so he's the good guy in the story. And I had to kind of pull him back a little bit from that. He's four. Of course, his media literacy isn't going to be great. Better than some people out there, but it's not, you know, we're developing the media literacy, right? Which takes me now to the, what am I on? Fourth elephant in the, who let all these elephants in here? To the fourth elephant in the room of what this story is about. And if it's not on the nose enough for you, the Butter Battle book is a commentary on the Cold War. A very, as some criticisms were brought up, some reviewers brought up when this book first came out, a very reductionistic view of the Cold War, that all of this major superpower at any moment, we could nuke each other into oblivion, could be boiled down to a simple disagreement over what side of the bread to put our butter. Which, in a way, I kind of understand that. I get that. To me personally, with this story, though it may be a commentary on the whole of the Cold War, for me personally, seeing how it centers itself on a story about two virtually identical groups of people. They have very similar names. One group, their noses point upward. The other group, their noses point downward. Their uniforms are almost identical. They're showing up with identical or nearly identical weapons. When you take all of this into consideration and the fact that they're divided by a wall, to me, it reads a little bit more as a, like, if it's all about the Cold War, it centers itself on East and West Berlin. That's how it kind of reads, East and West Germany. That's kind of how it reads to me, at least. But I'm a post-Cold War kid, after all. And maybe being a post-Cold War kid and knowing that we didn't nuke each other into oblivion may have influenced how I concluded that, okay, they chose to throw their bombs away, just like John Lennon would want. Like, I listened to the Beatles as a kid, but as an adult, I've never been like a John Lennon. I'm more of a Paul McCartney and the Wings guy myself, but maybe that's how I got to the "and they didn't kill each other" part, is the fact that I know how the Cold War ends. So yes, maybe it is a bit reductionistic of a depiction of the Cold War. I think it does fit a very specific part of it in a way. It does do an amazing job of writing the line of, is this book for kids or adults? Because this book doesn't shy away from using words like bombs and guns, and, you know, he's battered, but there's no like gore or blood or anything like that in between the battles. And, you know, there's this whole like usual use of like Seussisms throughout the book as well. So like, it does ride the line really well. And again, maybe it's reductionistic to boil the Cold War down to what side of the bread do you put your butter? But at the same time, what is a better way to capture a kid's imagination over something than to use something they're going to very definitely relate to? You know, trying to explain global powers is one thing. Explaining, hey, these people put butter on this side and they put butter on the other side and they don't like each other because of it. That a kid's going to grab that much easier. An adult is going to grab that much easier. But I guess I need to address the final elephant in this room, and I also need to watch my time. Why the heck am I talking about this? What? That's great and wonderful, Brandon. Why are we here? I found the Butter Battle book to be rather zen. A couple months ago, I think it was back in March now, I did an episode reviewing Zen and the Martial Arts by Joe Hyams, and that was my first introduction to Zen thought, at least very directly within my martial art training. And there's a lot of aspects to Zen, and I encourage you to go back and check that episode out, because don't really have time to get all the way back into it. But one of the big aspects of Zen is de-escalation. Is not a true martial artist doesn't necessarily go and start battles and go and start fights and doesn't continue to escalate violence, but looks for ways to de-escalate. And I think this book, not intentionally whatsoever by Dr. Seuss, actually serves as a great reminder of that. That like escalation of violence only leads to greater violence and greater uncertainty. That's part of the tension of the book, because the book would have come out during the Cold War. And it originally reads as like this buildup of not only violence, but uncertainty. And I think de-escalation of violence returns a person back to a sense of security. Or at least it can bring about, it could bring about a sense of security for an individual. How that gets worked out in some examples in Zen and the Martial Arts, I have some qualms with, but the general concept of being a peacemaker, being somebody who is looking for the peaceful alternative path for everybody, to de-escalate situations so that way people remain safe and secure rather than endangered or, you know, uncertain. Like, I think this, I think that is a wise path for people to take. I think that is the path that martial artists should be living, the kind of life that a martial artist should be living. And it's encouraging to me to see that a book that, even though it may be overlooked by the large catalog of Dr. Seuss-related media, I think it is encouraging to know that there is a book out there like this that I can start shepherding my son and other children can be shepherded by, to know that, like, escalation of violence isn't a good thing for several reasons. So that's the Butter Battle book for you. I don't really have much else to say about it, so let's go ahead and get out of here. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you haven't yet already, please rate and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. Pass this episode along to a friend and check out the other great shows here on the Anazao Podcast Network, like Systematic Geekology, Page and Pixel, and my sister's show, My Seminary Life. I've been taking an audio trip to a place called Bundyville throughout May, and I encourage you, if you like cult conversations, if you like stuff about cults, that might be a series for you to go check out. And actually, about 2 years ago, my wife and I sat down and we did a review of the movie adaptation of The Lorax. So if you want some more Dr. Seuss, there is actually, you had to go back a little bit to find it, but there is a Lorax episode. You can follow the show on Instagram at Kung Fu Pizza Party and on Letterboxd, Kung Fu Pizza PRTY, where you can get a review of the movie before the episode comes out. And check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, a place for faith and pop culture. I have nothing else to say in this episode, so thanks for listening. This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where we've delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and served up some wisdom, one slice at a time.